soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate y gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So all you listening in on 92.5, we thank you as well. Just a quick reminder here, a couple of things here. Danish inspirations, modern contemporary furniture. Jan Christian and Company, the best modern contemporary furniture in Houston. That's your style. You go in and see Jan. He's the Great Dane. It's Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, danishinspirations.com. And, of course, this show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We get the opportunity to do interviews like this. He is the technical director of the Houston Dynamo. He is Asher Mendelson. He joins us now. Asher, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, Glenn, thanks. It's great to be here.
All right. Always good to get this great level of transparency from the real decision makers in and around the competitive side of the team. You know, the first one I want to talk to you is just, and I haven't asked you this question, and I think my listeners would love to know this, what it was like working for the current U.S. manager, Greg Berhalter.
It was great. I mean, you know, Greg is a guy who has a very clear idea of how he sees the game and how he likes to work. And so it was a wonderful experience to work with him and get to, get to help make his vision of what a club should look like a reality. So it was a really good experience for me. I learned a lot. I think I helped him a little bit along the way. And it's great to see all the success he's now taken, from that environment and applied to the U.S. national team. And I have really high hopes for what he's going to be able to accomplish. As he sees out qualifying and then hopefully making a statement. And it's weird to say this, but this winter at the World Cup.
Yeah. We forgot it is in Qatar. You know, everybody says Greg's so detailed. That's the first thing I hear a lot of times out of people's mouths is how detailed he is with his work. You know, when you look at the game, not through his eyes, through your own lens, where do you draw that line of details and then sort of that line where then it's really down to the player and the player improvising within the context of a game?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think people have different philosophies on the game. But in the end, if you're a real student of positional play, then the idea is that everyone on the field has a role to play. And it only works if everyone's playing that role. Having said that, it puts players in situations where they are allowed to make decisions and where they are allowed to improvise and they are allowed to be creative. But it's all within a certain structure and a certain framework. I think in terms of Greg and his attention to detail, that's spot on. I think that's totally correct. And I think it comes down to two things. One is, in the end, he's a teacher, right? And anyone who's taught, no matter what profession that is, you know, the better teachers are the ones who really hone in on, you know, not just the general broad, you know, brushstrokes, but really get into the detail of the craft and to teach kind of every single person who's interfacing with that domain how to make them a little better at what they do. And so, when people talk about details, whether that's just, you know, center back dropping an extra 5 yards to make space, you know, for the center midfielder now to get the ball, you know, something as small as that, or, you know, what foot are you touching the ball with as you're receiving it so that you can move the ball that much faster and disorganize an opponent. I mean, those are all little pieces of the craft that you know, Greg tried to impart on every player on the field to make, you know, them a little more effective, but ultimately to make the group more effective. So that's one, you know, in terms of his detail in his teaching, but equally there's a detail in terms of culture, that he was a big proponent of. And I also agree with, which is very much along the lines of kind of the broken window theory, which is, you know, if one thing is off in an environment, there's tends to be kind of a cascading effect of then setting off the next thing and the next thing and the next thing off. And all of a sudden you look around and you say, well, there are no standards here. And so, so I would apply kind of that kind of general sentiment, attention to detail, to both of those domains, one of teaching and then one of just kind of maintaining a high level of standard of a way to work.
Talking to Asher Mendelson, he is the technical director of the Houston Dynamo. If I take you back into that, and it's making players better, and the Dynamo fan base knows it's the same midfield players that were here last year. So I have to get the sense that you guys feel you can make this midfield better.
I think the role of any coach and also the role of our club in general is how do we, one, bring more value into the organization through new people. And the secondly is the people that we have, how do we make them more valuable, you know, just from the environment we're trying to create here. What I'd say is, you know, we've actually, you know, I know people say, well, you know, you guys haven't made a ton of changes. You know, I would say, oh, we've actually made quite a few in relation to the rest of the league, in relation to how many changes we've made when we first came into Columbus. Where we didn't have a huge roster turnover, but we implemented a new way to play. We have added a number of players. We will add a pretty big piece in the center midfield this summer. We're also very enthusiastic about, about getting more minutes out of players who were on the roster last year but weren't fit or came late, I say fit, you know, they had missed time for injury or they joined the team late. You know, we think we can get more minutes out of someone like a Coco Karaskia. You know, and who, you know, has proven that he can be impactful in that role as he's done with Panama. And we think he can make a difference here with us as well. You know, we think it also takes a little bit of time for a new way to play to take hold. And we think that the pieces we have, the players we have now, we anticipate they're going to get better in those roles as they have more time in this system and have more time working with our coaching staff.
So what I'm getting at is, guys like Darwin Seren, Memo Rodriguez, Matias Vera, they've got established habits at their age now, right? So technically, you're probably not going to make them better, but you could potentially make them better based on the tactical plan and the way you set them up, who's next to them, these types of things. Is that, am I reading this correctly?
Yeah, Glenn, I'm maybe a little more of an optimist where I think people can still learn even though mm-hmm. they've done things a certain way for a period of time. I mean, I've seen it in the context of pro soccer, and I'll use kind of one of someone you're very familiar with, but you know, a guy who I was really impressed with his ability to take on information and try new things in the last year or two of his career was Ricardo Clark when he came and joined us in Columbus. You know, and here's a guy who's won just about everything you can win in MLS. He went abroad, you know. Had a career in a top league in the world. You know, it has success with the national team, and he came back into our environment in Columbus. And for the last, you know, the year that we got to work with him before we left, he ended up staying. You know, he took on new ideas and was trying new things. You know, and not just in terms of off the field of how do you elongate a career, but also just on the field of how to interpret the position that he had been playing for 15 years as a pro. He was still trying to get better at that. So I'm hopeful. I'm an optimist.
I'm not being a pessimist. I'm just saying that's interesting because Major League Soccer is a league where a lot of players go to different clubs, and there's got to be a belief in your mind that you can make these guys better in our environment. If not, I mean, why are you in coaching, right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. No, exactly. So it's always fascinating when that happens and works with somebody and you just go, wow, this guy looks like a completely different player, you know?
Absolutely. No. And that's where I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time, you and I, talking about who's the new player coming in, how else are we going to improve the roster. But I think we have a lot of talent here. And I think we need to help bring that out. And so that's a work in progress. We're not where we want to be right now. We're not shying away from that, but we are optimistic and hopeful that we can get more out of what we have.
Great opportunity to talk here with the technical director, Asher Mendelson. Well, you mentioned Coco Carrasquillo, so let's go into him. Could he be the key to maybe pushing this team forward a little bit and creating a few more chances in and around Sebas Ferreira?
Yeah, I mean, I think Coco has a huge amount of upside. We saw it even last year in some of the games that he played. You know, the game against Seattle in particular stands out, where he has a tremendous ability to break lines on the dribble, play forward. And advance between lines. We've seen him, like I said, we've seen him do it with Panama. We've seen him do it here with the Dynamo. I think we even saw it in the few minutes he played against Kansas City, where he came on and made a very positive impact offensively and someone who really can connect the game for us. So, I think he's someone who has a lot of quality. And I think if we can get him playing at his potential, I think he can make a big difference in our attack.
Asher, would he be kind of an example of what we were just talking about, a guy that you're trying to get to do a few different things maybe with Panama? He does play a little bit deeper. Now maybe you're, in training, working with a player like this, say, look, we want you to take people on. We want you to break people down off the dribble. Is that maybe a good comparison maybe to what we were just talking about?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, I think he has some very outstanding natural qualities. In terms of his ability to win duels and ride through challenges and connect the next pass, as well as what he brings to the table defensively. I think with him, having him interpret space within a positional play style of play, I think that's an area that I like to see him continue to evolve. And is with a lot of the guys, because not everyone's played in that type of system. So it's not a knock on him or singling him out. I think that's just one of the types of things that, as guys have more repetitions within the way we want to play and are more comfortable with each other, I think we'll see them perform at higher levels.
All right, let's talk about Hector Herrera. Everybody's really excited about that in Houston.
I'm looking forward to having him join the group. He almost doesn't need an introduction. He's got such an incredible career that he's put together. And, what was really, really exciting, what got Pat and Paul and myself, ownership, really behind is his reasons for being here. He had bigger offers on the table that he turned down. He had offers from, and I don't mean this any offense to anyone, but bigger clubs than Houston Dynamo, teams that are still playing in the Champions League right now, who wanted his services and were committed to giving him very, very attractive contracts. And in the end, what he was drawn by wasn't money, and it wasn't, it wasn't playing at a club, that's vying for Champions League. He wanted to build something, and he wanted to build something and be a trailblazer. And I know the club's had success in the past, but he bought into the vision that frankly, Ted laid out about where our club can go and what his role can be in that, which is at the forefront. He can be an icon for this city in its sporting landscape, and one that maybe looks a little different than some of the previous sports icons in Houston. And that's something that really resonated with him and he was really drawn to. And, so for us, we're one, obviously very, very excited to get a player of his quality joining our group. We know it's going to make an impact on the field. We know his leadership brings the locker room, but we're also really excited about what we think he can bring to the city.
Asher Mendelson joining us there. My apologies. I started to lose my voice there for a minute. And so Asher, like an expert, jumped in there and filled the space. Nice job. We'll push off your TV career and radio career for a while, I think. Let's move on to data and analytics, because I know that's a big piece of how you scout. And tell me about that and how much faith you put in that. And because I know that is a big, big part of the game now.
Yeah. I'll share a quick anecdote, but I'm the son of an economist. So from my whole life, I've always been asked, what's the value of things, but I'm also, the son of a playwright. And so, I have an appreciation for the human side and the human experience we all go through. And I think it's a really interesting, metaphor for how to use analytics in sport, because, I think that, putting valuations on actions, putting valuations on players, I think it gives us a different lens through which to view the sport and to view how individuals can contribute to value creation in soccer. That's how do you score goals? How do you prevent goals? And so I think it's a critical tool. But in the end of the day, this is a sport that's dictated by individuals, people, and we can't lose sight of that. And so I think, where analytics work the best is when it's a tool that can be used to shed new light on problems and sometimes make very complex problems a little bit simpler. But in the end of the day, it doesn't replace the human side of what we do. And so when you have that marriage, when you have someone who understands the human side and is fluent in the analytics, I think that's when this is really works the best.
So my assumption is you use this to scout players. You use it to teach current Dynamo players, right? I mean, you could pull somebody into a room and talk to them and show them some data. Is that fair to say? Are those two examples of where you use it?
Yeah. So when you ask for examples, I'll first put my hand up and say I think it's an area that we need to invest more in the club. I don't think there's been a very significant amount of investment in the infrastructure and the personnel who are equipped to do high level analytics. And so that's an area that Pat, myself and ownership, we've identified as a place we need to improve. And that's not something that you flip a switch and it changes overnight. So it's a work in progress, I guess is what I would say. But in terms of how we actually use it it's in a player acquisition. So how do you take, 10,000 players in the world who could play in MLS and try to monitor their performance and identify players who we think can help us here in Houston. So that's one way to use it. And then once you narrow the funnel down and you have scouts go through and look and our coaching staff go through and look and narrow a list down, then do we do a deeper dive in the analytics and say, okay, how do these 10 players compare from a number standpoint? And sometimes things jump out at you, like that you haven't seen as you're watching a player, you all of a sudden you realize, if you look at 100 games worth of what they've done, you can say there's a couple of items in their performances that merit a closer look. And so then you go back and you hone in on that and you watch that. And so it's a nice way to kind of bounce back and forth between what's your eye see, what do the numbers tell you, and then go back and verify that with your eye. And when you're doing that, when you're doing it well, it's the data is used as a way to have a conversation and advanced conversations and try to cover blind spots that the eye sometimes can miss.
So I'm wondering, and the first thing I'm thinking as you're telling me this, it's very interesting. How receptive are older players to this? Veterans who maybe are bridging that line where data was not as important and now all of a sudden it has become more important. How receptive are those guys?
Yeah, so there's two sides. I mean, the example I used before was about acquiring players, and that has very little, that's just our staff talking to each other and to help make better decisions in terms of player acquisitions. In terms of teaching, it's another tool that can be used in teaching, right? And it's no different than video or animations or putting things up on the magnetic board or having people do walkthroughs in training or actually do exercises in training. Players all learn in different ways. And with some players, the data is very informative for them. When you show a player, okay, here's what your shot map looks like for the last game, year and a half. And by the way, here's the percentages of where, you are most likely to score. and so maybe, and some players, they just need to see that and all of a sudden it clicks. And other players you could show that to, and they have, they don't know what they're looking at, and they have a hard time understanding kind of what you're trying to get through them. And that's okay, right? Everyone learns differently. And guys are coming into those types of conversations from various backgrounds. People who have gone on to some of the best, get an education at some of the best universities in our country, to people who haven't finished high school. And so we have a very wide range of backgrounds of our players, and our job is to figure out, you know, what's the best way to convey information to each of them that works for them, not necessarily that works for us.
He's Asher Mendelson. Asher, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to wish you the best of luck against Vancouver this weekend. Big home game. Dynamo taking on the Vancouver Whitecaps. You go to HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you can get your tickets. Asher, thank you for that extended interview. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Asher Mendelson. We're going to take a break. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. By the way, also does presents our show in Austin at DaspitLawAustin.com. So if you're in need of a personal injury attorney, we don't want you to get in an accident, but you do, car, boat, motorcycle. It's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. We'll take a break. We roll on.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. This weekend, the Houston Dynamo will be taking on the Vancouver Whitecaps, the second home game of the season. HoustonDynamo.com to get your tickets. And joining us now, courtesy of Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture and Advantage BMW in Midtown, Dynamo defender and captain Tim Parker. Tim, thanks for joining us tonight.
No, thanks for having me on, Glenn.
Well, let's just talk about your first two games. Certainly, things look good defensively, very collective, work ethic. You guys running the show out of the back, you and Daniel Starris. It seems pretty solid from that perspective.
Yeah, it's been good. I think, and as a team, I think defensively we've done a really good job. I think, first and foremost, that's something that we kind of wanted to shore up and lock up in these first couple games, is just being tough defensively and not giving anything away, especially cheaply. So I think we've done a good job of that in the first two games.
Yeah, the Sporting game was impressive. They really did. You know, I thought you guys kept them out of your penalty area well and didn't really concede a lot of chances to them.
Yeah, I think they had a lot. They had a good amount of the ball in the first half, but we kind of knew that going in there. You know, Sporting's a tough place to play. They're a good team, and they really ride the energy of that crowd they have there. So in the first half, we wanted to kind of weather that storm. And when you're on the road in MLS, to be on the road and be 0-0 at halftime was something that we took as a big top positive. So, and then the second half, I thought we did a good job. Obviously, the goal, I think, is a little unlucky for us. But even in terms of with the ball in the second half, I thought we did a much better job in creating stuff and getting into their half.
Houston Dynamo defender Tim Parker joining us here on ESPN 97.5. This is Soccer Matters presented by the Daspit Law Firm. All right, let's take a look at Vancouver. Christian Dahomey, Ricky Gould, Lucas Cavallini, some good attacking players, yet they haven't scored a goal in their first two games, but I'm sure they're looking for road goals. You got a kind of a good differing mix of guys there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think Vancouver is obviously a team that I watch quite often, just having played there. But no, you know, I mean, they found a way to get hot last year at the end of the year and find a way into the playoffs. So there's definitely some belief in that squad and that team. So there's something that we have to be weary of when we look at everything this week.
Now, you guys, how badly do you need a goal going into this third game? I mean, number one, to take the pressure off you guys defensively, but just number two for the psyche of the squad.
Yeah, I think it would be huge, you know. Obviously, scoring is kind of like getting the monkey off your back, you know. So I hope that, you know, for multiple reasons that we end up finding the back of the net. And like you said, defensively, it gets a little bit of pressure off of us. But even for that attacking guys, it'll get their confidence going and hopefully give them the creativity and the confidence to kind of continue to do that.
All right. The prospect of Hector Herrera playing in front of you, that's got to be a pretty enticing one.
Yeah, you know, it's really exciting news. It's exciting news for the club. It's exciting for us as players. And, you know, especially for someone like me, who obviously I hope to, that he'll be playing right in front of me. So it's definitely really exciting for a player of that kind of caliber to come down here and to want to be part of what we're building down here.
And then the new mood with the owner and the spend, like for Hector Herrera, and some of the things you're seeing in the stadium and positions added, like Asher Mendelson as a technical director. I mean, this has to resonate with you guys as players, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think ever since Ted's come on, you know, I feel like he said a lot of the right things. And as players, you like to listen to some of the things that the new owner says, but he's also, he's backing it up pretty well. So we're definitely appreciative of everything that he's been doing so far as he's taken over in this kind of new year. But we're trying to relay that, you know, we're trying to obviously give him the product that he wants on the field. So it goes hand in hand for one another.
Yeah. With all of that, do you get the sense, the organization overall, whether it's you guys as players, as a new staff, even as people in the front office, that, you know, with a new owner, everybody's got to establish themselves. I think the bar has been raised pretty high here now.
Yeah, definitely to a certain extent. You know, I think no one wants to put unnecessary pressure on themselves, but, you know, with a new owner comes new expectations, and those kind of new expectations are going to be set by what his precedent is. So for us, we're excited to be a part of his new regime and his new model of what he wants the Houston Dynamo to be. But for us, it's still about winning games, and that's kind of what we have to take care of on the field.
Yeah, and I meant that as, in a way, a healthy pressure, not a unhealthy pressure, I guess, is what I would say. All right, so I look at Lucas Cavallini, big body, big guy, might be banging up against you. That's the kind of guy, though, I think I would think you like to play against.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think back in the early days of MLS, when I used to play against Dom Dwyer, I used to always look forward to playing against him too. So it's a guy that you kind of think he's honest. You know, he's a big guy that likes to throw his body weight around too. And obviously so do I. So I think he does it in an honest way, and he works hard. So I can appreciate that.
Well, Tim, anything you want to relay to the Dynamo fans heading into the Vancouver game on Saturday?
Yeah, no, I think this being our second game at home, we're looking forward to seeing the fans out there again for sure. And obviously we want to produce for you guys. We want to score goals. We want to create a fun environment and something that you guys can cheer us on for. So we're continuing to work at that. And I think coming this Saturday is going to be something that we're going to give you something you can be proud of.
Tim, thank you very much for your time. Best of luck against Vancouver this weekend. Always fun catching up with you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Tim Parker, Dynamo defender, captain, big one against the Vancouver Whitecaps. You heard him mention there the Whitecaps after a coaching change. Vanni Sartini getting them into the playoffs. They had a big energy, yet they have not scored in two games. Identical record to the Dynamo with a draw and a loss. It's the Dynamo Vancouver this weekend. This has been a great interview with Tim Parker, brought to you by John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. We'll take a break.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.
Hello, Houston. Jan Christensen with Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture with Soccer Matters Danish Dynamite segment. Yes, another week in the soccer world, and still a sad war in Ukraine continues, but a lot of support from the Premier League and from the Danish Superliga, where a lot of teams played with the Ukrainian flag on their chest or Ukrainian armbands. And at FC Copenhagen, the right back is David Shevchenko. He's a Ukrainian who lost his father-in-law in the war, and they had the Ukrainian flag everywhere at the FC Copenhagen's game. So FIFA has decided that all foreign players playing in Russia can now be released from their contracts, and the two Danish players from Rubin Kazan has decided to do so, to leave Rubin Kazan. So the soccer world stands together in this terrible war in Ukraine.
and soccer brings people together. So it's good to see that we do our little part of this sad war. Christian Eriksen finally played 90 minutes with Brentford and had a great game. I would give him 7 out of 10. He had one assist, and he has some beautiful passes down the middle, and actually about an 83% passing completion rate. So good to see Christian back, and for Danish soccer and the possibility of him coming to the World Cup, and also, of course, for Brentford, who is battling in the relegation battle, that he can help them out of that. In Denmark, FC Copenhagen won and FC Midtjylland won, so we're ready for the big battle on this Sunday, FC Midtjylland against FC Copenhagen, which I think if FC Copenhagen wins, it's going to decide the championship because they will be 6 points ahead. But FC Midtjylland, of course, can even it up if they can win. So that's going to be an exciting game. A lot of already sold out. And, you know, for Danish Superliga fans, that's the game of the week. And finally, in the United States, Michael Ura made his debut for Philadelphia Union. He only played about 20 minutes. But for those of you who don't know him, he's a really exciting center forward. From Brøndby, and he's actually still the top scorer in the Danish Super League. So very exciting to see him make his debut, and I think he's going to be a great asset for the MLS and for Philadelphia Union. And with that said, the Danish inspirations, we still got a lot of good floor samples on sale, but the store has been remodeled and looks beautiful. So come on into Danish inspirations at 2775-400 and see the quote-unquote new store. It looks great. We are red, we are white, we are Danish dynamite. DanishInspirations.com.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, final segment of the night. This is where we do our Houston soccer community update. Quick word here, though, for our good friends at Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get down to Advantage BMW in Midtown. They'll get you in a sedan. They'll get you in an SUV. Advantage BMW in Midtown. They'll take you through sales, service, financing. It's all so easy. The best customer care and service going is Advantage BMW in Midtown. Go down, see Justin, see Steven, our good friends. And Advantage BMW Midtown, longtime supporters of Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. All right. Our soccer community update, somebody who's affected the game here in a very, very big way in Houston. Full disclosure, good friend, former teammate on the Houston Dynamos in the 80s. He is Bill McDonald. He is the head soccer coach at Strake Jesuit Prep, where he just picked off his 600th. Listen to that, 600th win. Bill, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
All right, so let's just talk about it. I know a lot of your ex-players and people that have been associated with you throughout your career, I'm sure, are listening in here tonight. But 600 wins, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to the program? And through your lens, how are you feeling now after that?
Well, good. Yeah, it has been fun to hear and read and connect with players from the past in the last week or so. That's been a lot of fun. And certainly, you know, achieving something like that is special. But at the same time, I'm a coach and I'm in the middle of a season. And so, you know, I revert quickly back to the task at hand, and that's to try and win our next game, which is actually tonight, Glenn.
Strake Jesuit, we appreciate Bill McDonald, 600 wins. Look, you've done clinics, you've coached throughout the community, even outside of Strake Jesuit. So, you know, 600 wins there and all the times you've worked with youth. But one thing that's always stuck out to me about you, Billy, first and foremost comes a student athlete.
Well, yeah. You know, many years ago, I'd made a decision to go in this direction and try and make a career out of coaching young kids. And I think from the start, you know, I wanted to do it because I thought I was pretty fortunate to have, you know, good coaches in my life that helped me enjoy playing the game that I loved. And, you know, I think years ago, I just stepped back and said, you know, it'd be good if I could do that for some others. And I've had a lot of players over the years. It's been fun.
Got a lot of players that have gone on to coaching careers that have enjoyed and loved the game through your passion as well. Maybe you can talk about a couple of them. I'll go right to one that we all know who played in MLS, Nelson Aquari.
Yeah, it was fantastic to have Nelson on our team. At the same time, he was on our team. He was the captain of the U-17 national team, which, as you probably remember, had players like Landon Donovan and DeMarcus Beasley on it. But Nelson was, you know, just a fantastic young man as well as a great player, and the best kind of captain you could have on a team.
Bill McDonald joining us, Strike Jesuit Prep School, the head coach. 600 wins he just picked off, tied atop his conference. They are in action tonight. Bill, some of the other trademarks, because, you know, at one point you were juggling being both the athletic director and the soccer coach. That couldn't have been easy.
That was it was a challenge to do them both at the same time, but it was, you know, a passion. It was something I enjoyed. I've enjoyed all sports, a lot of sports through the course of my life. And being an athletic director at Strake Jesuit was something I took a lot of pride in trying to help all of those athletes in all of those sports. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. There also was a time where I was you know, coaching the indoor professional team, the Hotshots, at the same time as coaching at Strake Jesuit. So, you know, there were balancing acts. It had to go on, and you do it, and you have fun doing it. You try to, anyway.
Glad you brought that up. Bill McDonald was the assistant coach to Trevor Dawkins at the Houston Hotshots that played at the old Summit. But then you became the interim coach as well. With that team. So you've run the gamut here. You've done it at every level in Houston. You continued to play amateur soccer, and you played for quite some time with Rangers and the Houston Football Association. You kept that going as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I loved it. I played till I was 45, and, you know, a lot of those times I'd be playing across the field from some of the players I'd been coaching or coaching against, and that was a lot of fun, especially to see how the players progressed and became even better. And like you alluded to earlier, went on to play in college and even some beyond. So, you know, I think that's, you can just sum that up in, you know, when you love the game, you're involved in it in a lot of different aspects.
All right. You don't coach this long, 32 years, without evolving as a coach and changing. And I have to think, you know, from when you first started to now, it must be very different to coach young men in soccer. Take me into that and take me into how you've had to change a little bit and how the player that you're coaching now is changed.
That's a tough question. I think that, you know, players have changed over the years. Right now, you know, the players have a lot that are competing for their attention, and that may have been a little different many years ago. But other than that, you know, the players have access to so many different things, and we're getting more and more talented players at the high school level. And, you know, we're watching them, you know, get into the professional game nationally and internationally at a younger level. And I think it's pretty exciting. The players are definitely more skillful. They're technically advanced and tactically just a lot better than they were when I started.
Bill McDonald, head coach of Strake Jesuit, joining us tonight. You made a very critical decision with your program because you were playing against, you know, other prep schools, and you made a commitment to try and play against the public schools to increase the competition for your program. Take us into that a little bit about That I think was a very, very significant move on your part, and was that a difficult move to pull off?
Yeah, this was back in the early 2000s. The Strake Jesuit was in a league, a private school league, and all of a sudden found itself without a league. And you know, the move to the UIL for all sports was the right one, and it put us in a more competitive, balanced athletic atmosphere. Maybe, you know, in the private school league, there were some more championship wins in a lot of sports than there are when you're now in a greater public school. But it was the right move, and I'm glad we made it. And it's been I don't know how many years, but a lot of years in the UIL soccer, and we've achieved some success that I'm proud of for our players and our school, and we're going to hopefully try and do it some more.
He's Bill McDonald, head coach of Strake Jesuit, as things are rolling on. Was there any initial resistance to that, to you joining? Because these things can get political when it comes to high school sports.
Yeah, of course there was. And it was, you know, kind of a difficult time because, you know, people had thoughts that, you know, public was public and private was private and there shouldn't be any crossing of the lines. But I think ultimately, you know, everyone involved figured out that it was the right move, and it's still the same as it was just about 20. I think we're, you know, next year be maybe 20 years in the UIL or the following year. But I think people have figured out that ultimately it was the right move to make.
What are two of your most memorable moments over the course of 600 victories, Billy?
Well, taking the Strake Jesuit to the UIL Final Four in 2010 and 11, and winning state championships in the TCIL back in the 90s. We had a lot of players involved in that, and we had some fun times. And those are, you know, moments of great pride.
All right, let me take you back to the Houston Dynamos in the 80s where we were teammates. And, you know, those were differing times. We were in a league at one point. We were playing out at Butler Stadium. We started playing a lot of international games against teams like the U.S. national team would need a game and come in and play us. We played Linfield from Ireland out there, Sheffield United, Leones Negros from Guadalajara. What are some of the memories of those years? Because, boy, when I look back at those times, it's amazing to see where the game has grown now when it comes to infrastructure, pay, visibility, all the other things that, you know, at that time you were striving for.
Yeah, you look back on it and, you know, just feel like I was fortunate, you know, to be in that group. All I was doing was following what I loved, and I know you were too. And but all of a sudden, we were in with some players from, you know, the Dutch national team. I mean, that had played for them and playing against players that played in the World Cup. And you know, you didn't even think too much about it back then. But I was pretty fortunate, and I still have fond memories about those years.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that people in Houston know that Wim Serbier, who started in the '74 World Cup, was on our team. We had guys from the first division in England. There was no Premier League, Manny Andruszewski. We had the uncle, our great friend, and who's still coaching, Beto DeSantos, playing in midfield, who's the uncle of Gio and Jonathan of the Mexican national team. We had Jose Neto from Brazil. We had Les Shkreli, who played in Greece in the first division. You know, it was quite a mix of guys. And then you had American talent as well, like Mike Barbrick, a goalkeeper. We had Bill Irwin, who went on to be the coach at Portland, along with Clive Charles. And then he took the head coaching job, Bill Irwin, who spent a lifetime in soccer. So, you know, I look back at this group of guys, and so many of them remained in the game.
Yeah, it's great to keep connections to a lot of those guys over the years. We've gotten to see them a few times. Yeah, the game has risen higher and higher, and it's definitely because of the people who were in it 20 and 30 years ago and kept it going and put it at a place where it could go higher.
Yeah, a lot of
and don't forget Jim Walker. Jim Walker was here as our general manager, and what a fantastic thing he's done in this city to promote youth soccer.
Yeah, no question about it. Jim Walker and the owners, John Gaughan and Pete Kane, tremendous guys. It's a long time ago. They were great nights. They were very hot nights out at Butler Stadium. Sometimes there'd be 4,000 people packed in there. It didn't hold a lot, 4,000 or 5,000 people. We'd be playing teams from Ireland or Sheffield United with Phil Thompson, the former captain of England. And, you know, those are indelible moments. I mean, I just remember pulling up there and walking to the locker room and just how hot it was. And, you know, there's just things you remember that kind of stick out from nights out there, and just remarkable to think about it.
Well, yeah, about 7 or 8 years ago, I pulled up in a bus to play a playoff game at the same stadium for Strake Jesuit in the UAL playoffs.
Unbelievable. You know, I don't think I've ever been back out there. I don't think I've been ever back to Butler Stadium out on South Main. We did play in Del Mar, too. But yeah, it's been a while. Well, that's a pretty cool moment that you came back there with your high school team. Well, Bill, listen, congratulations, 600 victories. Before I let you go, cause I don't know this as a fact, how many people have 600 plus wins in high school soccer? Can you help me there?
I know is that in Texas, there's four or five, and, there's four or five other ones in Texas.
All right, that's as humble as you get. Bill McDonald, 600 victories, Strake Jesuit, a lifetime of giving to our soccer community here in Houston. Bill, thank you so much for coming on tonight, and I will see you soon.
Thanks, Glenn.
All right, that does it for tonight. That was not an easy interview to get to because that's not a guy that likes the light shined on him, and I had to kind of beg and plead and push and prod to get him to do it. So reluctantly, I got him to do it. That does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Don't forget, you get the podcast at ESPN975.com. For my great producer, Andrew Carlson, for all of you out there, including our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Thanks for tuning in. You get the podcast at ESPN975.com. You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. Remember, soccer matters. Till next Tuesday, I'm out.
Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5.